Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance FIL 240 for spring semester 2026. Today, Foundations of Finance. We are stepping into just the routine of the semester now. I will take the time today to make sure that you are able to get logged in under your university credentials to LinkedIn. And our teaching assistant, Ms. Meredith Springer, will be guiding you through that process. So follow along on your own computer in LinkedIn, and then you'll be able to get your free LinkedIn Learning, and you'll be able to get a free course that will fulfill the Excel requirement for this. And I will do that just briefly in just a moment here. As a matter of fact, why don't we do that right off the bat?
That's fine.
Oh, that one's good. Without further ado, now you go ahead. Now there's also a PowerPoint that is in your files folder that shows you how to do this too. But we'll let you go ahead and set that up right away here. Take it away, Ms. Springer. Today, Foundations of Finance. This will be the first time that we do the everyday, let's look at the numbers. But I need to do some setup before I show you the numbers. And I do this every day. I say the same things over and over until it gets baked into you, the thinking that is behind the numbers and how you think about what is a good investment versus what is a bad investment. And it is a, like I said, there's a repetitive part to it every day, and there's also a build-up part every day where I add more context. At first, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it does over time. This is how the best way to learn the markets is through just looking at the numbers and getting a feel for what's going on. The one thing that I want to start with is, and I talked about this on Monday, but I want to reiterate this part about stocks and markers that actually write stocks. We're having ourselves a good time trying to find stocks and bonds and other types of investments. There we go. Stock. When I say stock, I could actually mean several different animals, and I'll get into that a little later in the semester. But typically when we say stock, we're talking about what is called common stock. It is essentially represents a piece of ownership of the company. So you, sir, own 10 shares of Microsoft. That means that you are just like Bill Gates. You're an owner of Microsoft. Except Bill Gates is very old and he's extremely wealthy. And you aren't. But you own a part of Microsoft. That's what stock means. Now, bonds are debt instruments. They represent lendings to the company. So you, madam, own 100 bonds in my company. That means that you have lent me money. And I issued you the bonds. But she buys your bonds. You can trade them. That means that now I no longer owe you anything. She is my debt holder. And I owe her interest payments and then the face value. Those are the two most common kinds of financial instruments. Now, there are other types of investments besides financial instruments. There are, for example, we can talk about financial assets as opposed to physical assets. You own a car. That's a physical asset. You own gold. That's a type of physical asset we call a commodity. You own oil. That's a physical asset that is also a commodity. You own pork bellies. That's a physical asset that's delicious when you make it into bacon. Smoked, right?
Okay.
So there are all kinds of different things out there that you can invest in. Some are for personal use. Some are for the purpose of hoping that they will increase in value. Those, that process of going from a lower value to a higher value is called capital gains. Now, when you own stock in my company, your biggest hope is that that stock will go up in price and you'll be able to sell it for more than you bought it for. But along the way, I might also pay you dividends. A little extra, just because, you know, we love our shareholders. The price you see for stock on these exchanges that I'm going to about start showing you is called the market price. That's not the only price that is important, but it's the only price you actually see. And that market price is a second by second equilibrium of the buyers of the stock, those who want the stock to buy, and those who have the stock to sell. In other words, if there are a lot of buyers and very few sellers, that price will move upward. If there are more sellers than buyers, that price will go down. It will just keep pounding down until the price is low enough to clear the market and find a new equilibrium price. So that price is vibrating. It's moving up and down and up and down as traders all over the world, by the millions, by the tens of millions, sometimes hundreds of millions, are buying and selling stock second to second during the trading time on the exchange. Now, we're in the United States, so our exchanges are on a are on the East Coast system. They open up at, 9 o'clock, and then they close at like 3:30, something like that. Now, there are other exchanges all over the world that the United States isn't the only place where there are exchanges. Now, in other parts of the world, they don't call them exchanges usually. You'd probably hear the word bourse, B-O-U-R-S-E. But there's a London bourse. There's Hong Kong bourse, there's Paris bourse, there's places all over the world where exchanges are, stocks are listed on those exchanges, and there are buyers and sellers of the stocks on those exchanges. So you'll see me look at other exchanges every day because they give us a pulse of the world. Like, for example, we usually would like to say, okay, Hong Kong, Tokyo, those exchanges are lighting up. In our time, that would have been last night. And there's trading going on. And then as the sun sets in the East Asia, in Asia, it's beginning to rise in Europe. And then those exchanges wake up for the day, and there's trading. A little further to the west, the sun rises, and the London Exchange and several other exchanges right there in the UK begin to light up. And then the sun is, it begins to set over there, on that side of the Atlantic, and the sun rises on the east coast of the United States, and our big exchange, the New York Stock Exchange, lights up and the trading happens over there. And then when that one begins, the sun gets farther over to the west and then sets in California, it's rising in Hong Kong, Tokyo again. And then the whole cycle repeats. In other words, this is a 24-hour-a-day cycle. The world is always awake somewhere. Trading is happening somewhere. Greed and all of those fabulous things that are driving markets, it's always awake and always alive. On a given night, as I am sleeping, I have big monitors showing me the activity over in Tokyo and in other parts of Asia. And then as I grovel and get myself ready to come here, I'm keeping an eye on the European side in the and the UK, And then it gets over here. By that time, I'm over here and I'm seeing these markets coming alive. It's always there. It's always on. And the amount of money we're talking about is in any given day in the trillions and trillions of dollars. It is a vast ocean. And most people don't have any idea that this is happening. There are these oceans of different types of value in stocks, in bonds, in commodities. It's always happening, swirling around the world. And most people are just living their lives day to day, and they see these things and they have no idea, and they build their conspiracy theories, or they just ignore it, whatever. You, unfortunately, you are becoming aware of all of that, that ghost in the machine that is actually moving the world forward in time. I'm trying to give you a good sort of overview. I said that stocks have, and other things have, prices that are, the ones we see are the market prices. The market price is just a snapshot of what the information is at a given time about a company's value. Because if a company is worth $100 million, and there are 1 million shares outstanding, then each of those stock shares will be worth $100. But that is kind of irrelevant because the markets are driven purely by the information of the minute or the second. If some key piece of information happened yesterday, it's worthless to us today. That's why one of the biggest fallacies that is promoted by all of these talking heads on financial news networks and all that kind of stuff. Well, we've been looking at this chart of the stock price over the past 5 weeks. That information is irrelevant. Whatever is in that stock price right now already has captured anything that happened before. We have way too many traders, way too many computers that are, by the second, drawing the information out of the information universe and getting it into the stock prices. So that stock price is going to just vibrate. It's just going to pop up and down. And you'll see that here. The price is just flashing different every couple of seconds. That's because these markets are driven purely by the moment. That's the market price. However, there is another price that you don't see. I'm trying to think. You, sir, are my son. I mean, I'm looking at you right now, and I am personally disappointed in you. You wrecked the car last night. You were on the phone talking to a girl saying, "I can't be." And you haven't had a job in like 4 weeks, and you're eating everything out of my refrigerator. So if I were to put a price on you at this moment, it would be $20. That's a market price. Because you said, "I'll take him for $20. Fool. Fine. Take him. You know. However, there's an intrinsic price to him. That's the long run price. What will he be in the future? And I bring that back to the present, and that would not be the price he is right now. It might be more, it might be less, but it is what we call an intrinsic price. It is the underlying true price, and that is not the market price. I could have the intrinsic, the market price is just over time, it's just bobbling up and down as traders drive the stock price. But underneath it is an intrinsic price that we hope would be growing over time. Now, sometimes the market price will be overvaluing, and sometimes the market price will be undervaluing. Only in an unusual circumstance would you ever see the market price be the same as the intrinsic price. In this class, I'm teaching how to be the long hauler. You are the responsible people of the future. You don't act on the second or the minute. You are rational and you control your passions in your trading. So I teach the long run. I could not tell you what a stock price could be tomorrow, but I can give you a really darn good idea of what it will be in a year, 5 years, 10 years. Because we cannot guess at a random process. And stock prices are actually a purely random price, a random phenomenon. They, in physics, these were understood about more than a century ago. There's a rather famous mathematician, you would know his name if I told it to you, who actually did the math of what we call Brownian motion, just bobbling, bouncing motion. It's mathematical. We know everything about it. One thing we do know is that you cannot predict where it will be the next moment. But over a long period of time, we know everything about it. By the way, the mathematician who got the science and the mathematics of random walks into mathematics was none other than Albert Einstein, of all the things, before relativity theory and all of that. So we know, first of all, that these processes get to a place. What we cannot know by the physics of the universe is where they are at any given point in time along the way. This is also a very important principle in quantum mechanics too, that the uncertainty principle. But anyway, so when I show you these prices, I'm showing you the snapshot of what is just now happening in buy versus sell volume on a mark on an exchange. Now understand that some exchanges are so big. Okay, we would love to, well, what did the New York Stock Exchange do today? Well, that thing is so huge, we probably wouldn't want to try to add up all the stock prices and divide by the number of stocks. So in a lot of cases, we use a sample called an index. So sometimes we can see a whole market, a whole exchange, but a lot of times it's more useful to look at like a good representative group of stocks. Like for example, on the Tokyo Exchange, I will show you the Nikkei 225. Now, if there's a number after the word, that means that it isn't the whole exchange, it's an index from the exchange. So in other words, the Nikkei 225 would be an index of 225 big top companies on the Tokyo Exchange. The S&P 500, the Standard & Poor's 500, that is 500 of the biggest publicly traded companies in the United States. We kind of like add up the prices and divide by the number of stocks in it. And we do that every minute of every day. Just to keep an, it's like keeping, instead of me sticking my hand into my heart to see what my heartbeat is, I take my pulse here on my arm or on my neck. So these 225, 500, 2000, and all of those. Dow 30 is a famous one too, and we'll look at it here in a minute. These are good samplings. Now, they can tell you different things. For example, let me start this out. And again, if you don't get what I'm saying, I'm going to say it so many times that you will be sick of me saying it. It will begin to bake into you the words and the terms that we use in our business. And there are a couple of reasons for that. You are becoming more than the average fool out there. You're becoming more than the person who does what a politician says or a financial talking head says or some lifestyle guru says. You are informed and empowered to do this on your own. Because there are a lot of places that are going to, the pitch will be empowerment, but the sale is going to be weakness, dependency. So I'm going to get you past that pitch and let you know that you can do this yourselves in this. So now, without further ado, let's look at the numbers. Really? Come on. There we go. Okay. Now, I will be introducing more and more of these. There are some core ones that I want you to know right off the bat. One here, oh, really, this one's a mess. Now, I really don't recommend, if you're going to do real serious trading, you want to use a trading platform. One of the best is TD Ameritrade's Thinkorswim. Well, TD Ameritrade is now Schwab. Other ones, trading platforms, Robinhood has one, Fidelity has one. All these services you can get on a brokerage account with have their own trading platforms. I would show you mine, except that my account number is up there in the opening screen, and I'll be damned if I'm going to let you see my account number. Okay, so let's look at the ones that are kind of important. And these, for example, I'm going to look in the United States to begin with. The first one would be the Dow 30. Now, you see that number, 30, so that means it's not an exchange. It's a sample of 30 stocks on the New York Stock Exchange. Now, these 30 are the biggest of the giant companies of the world. The industrial, or actually, interestingly enough, the Dow 30 used to be called the Dow Industrials. And it was because all of the biggest companies were industrial companies. But in recent years, as industry in the United States has sort of taken a back seat to entertainment and things like that, a lot of these companies on the Dow 30 are now big entertainment companies. So I think the originators of the Dow 30 would be rolling over in their graves if they knew that a company represented by a giant mouse was on their Dow 30. But this is telling me that today the market is down for the Dow 30. Let me do something right here. If a market is down, we say that it is a bear market, B-E-A-R, a bear market. If a stock is down, we'd say that investors are bearish on that stock. Now, if a market is going up, we say that it is a bull market. Say that for me. No, not bull. Bull! You got to be forceful about it. Yeah, this is a bull market. Yeah. Or I am a bullish investor. Or this stock, I'm bullish on this stock. Bears and bulls are always at each other's throats. The bears are selling, the bulls are buying. And if the bears are in a better position, then it will be a bear day. But if the bulls are in a better position, then it will be a bull day. But there's no such a thing as a day when there aren't both bulls and bears running roughshod over the markets. So I can see that right now the Dow 30 is in bearish territory. And notice how information is driving this. Do you see how right there at the very opening bell, the ding, 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 the market was slipping? And let me granularize this. Okay. Do you see how at the beginning, it was down at the opening. And then the bulls grabbed a hold. There was some bullish information. But then the bear said, uh-uh. And so look at this volatility. That is normal. That's the market price. Now, there is an underlying price, an intrinsic. But that that's not driving the market on any given day. And you see, the bears had a surge. There was a large block of sell orders, which, of course, drives markets down. And then the bulls came back, okay, fine, we're going to buy some of that cheapo stock. And it bounced. And then the bulls had a run for a while. And then the bears said, no. And as you can see, that there's a trend here in these later hours of the trading day. Do you see how it seems on average, on balance, that the bulls are beginning to feel their oats and information is working on their side, bits of information coming in. So there does seem to be a little bit of a bullish trend here in the late trading on this stock. Now let's go back. Another one. This is the legendary S&P 500. 500 of the largest companies of the earth. You put the market capitalization of those 500 companies together, and you have got more than the value of all of the nations of the earth, almost, except for the U.S. and China. This is an enormous measure. In matter of fact, the S&P 500, we oftentimes consider that a reasonable approximation of the world market. What's this S&P 500 doing? Well, that's sort of pretty good as saying, what's the world economy doing today? And if you look at the S&P 500, granularize this one, you can see that there was definitely a bearish trend in the early trading hours. And then there was a bull run, and then the bears took over. But again, you notice that it was pretty flat there for a while. There was a balance of information that was good and bad, so there wasn't really any trending movement, bearish or bullish. And I see a little bit, I don't see it as much as I did in the Dow, but there has been a little bit of bullish activity in here, and then everyone's taking a breather right now. But generally speaking, it's not a great day. Now the next one is an actual exchange. The great big one is the New York Stock Exchange, the NYSE. It's that one you see on, sometimes you might have seen it in movies or commercials where all these guys are yelling and screaming, papers flying all over the place, buy, sell. It is bedlam, and it is a madhouse. I was there many years ago, and it was just, I thought, this is ridiculous. But that's how it works. There's an open cry system. You called your broker. You said, I want to sell 100 shares of some company at $100 a share. They contact me on the floor of the exchange. I send a runner out there to get to the market maker that's dealing in that stock. And you're screaming at him, $100. And he says, screw you. I will sell it. You want to sell it. I will buy it from you at 95. And you say, kiss my ass. I don't want 95. I want 100. You over there say 60. I've got 60 and I'll sell you at 100. I'll buy from you at 100. Okay, I've cleared 4. I need 40. Someone says 20. You say 10. And then I clear the order and I satisfy it to you. And all you see is electronic blips. That's all you see. But it's a process. You're the runner out there on the floor. I might be a competing runner. I'm going to try to trip you and have you fall flat on your face out there. But your job is to try to get 100 shares sold at $100 each. And the market maker, me, I'm not going to do it for you. But there are other traders right around you, and they're going to write it on a ticket they'll probably never look at again, and they'll execute the order on their end. That's how this whole mess is working. The New York Stock Exchange is vast. This is 500 companies on it. Now, there are other exchanges. The New York Stock Exchange is a great big 800-pound gorilla, but there's another one that is massive. It doesn't have the companies that are huge. At least most of the companies on it aren't huge. It's called the NASDAQ, NASDAQ. National Association of Securities Dealers Automated Quotes. These are mostly small companies, small caps, and it's all electronic. There is no platform for the NASDAQ, no physical place When I ran a penny stock house many, many years ago, it was all on the computers of the time. They weren't very impressive, but they were computers. And an order would pop up, flash up on the screen, and then market makers who had that stock or wanted that stock would start to fill parts of the order. And it's basically the same thing now, except it happens at insane speed, and it is all over. It's huge. So many companies are on the NASDAQ. Like I said, mostly smaller companies, higher risk companies. Cheaper, the price is cheaper because they're higher risk companies. Here's the thing. If you see a stock symbol with one, two, or three letters, that's an NYSE company. If you see a company that has a listing with four letters, that's a NASDAQ company. So in other words, if I look at, for example, if I were to look at J&J, Johnson & Johnson, okay, that's three letters, it's an NYSE company. If I were to look at a company like VXRT, Vaxart, that's four letters, that's a NASDAQ company. The strange thing is that you see some absolutely giant companies with four-letter trading symbols. They were companies that were small when they started trading publicly, but they grew giant, but they never moved over to the NYSE. I'll give you an example. Microsoft, MSFT, Amazon, AMZN. These are four-letter companies, so they're trading on the NASDAQ. But they're giants. They're not, they are the exception. They're like these giants walking around in a forest of dwarves. But there, you can see some big companies there. Now, I was obviously with a penny stock house. I was making market in very, very small, nearly dead companies at the time. But once in a while, I'd end up having an order come through, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do with it for some company that had three letters. I remember an MMM came through once. I thought, what the heck am I supposed to do with this? My electronic screen doesn't do that. But it just gives you an idea. So the NASDAQ here, it is taking the pulse of the very small, scrappy, high-risk companies. Now, the Dow is slow to react. It doesn't move much in any given time frame. It's lethargic. Those companies are very low risk, and information just kind of bloop, bloop, like that. The S&P 500 is more volatile, and it will tend to have larger ups and larger downs. The NASDAQ is usually the most volatile. Any piece of information that might make the Dow go, or the S&P go, the NASDAQ would be, like that. So you tend to see the movements up and down more. Now, movements up and down. In our world, we really don't care a whole lot about numbers, about the price of a stock, how much it went up or how much it went down. What we care about are percentage changes. The numbers themselves, well, the Dow went down 800 points today. Well, that was just, what? Was that like 0.5%? You see, we care only about the percentage change. Give you an example of that. You, madam, you own a stock for $10 and it goes up $1. That's a 10% increase. But if you own a stock for $100 and it goes up $1, that's just a 1% increase. That's why we can't care about the actual numbers. We care only about the percentage changes from day to day. Now, if we look here at the market, we have a bear market going on today. That's the latest it's been today. Okay, we have a market going on today where the Dow is down 0.34%, about a third of a percent. Look at the S&P 500. Remember I said it is more reactive. It is going down 0.8. It's right now down 0.83% from where it closed yesterday. So you see that more greater reactivity. And look at the S&P 500. Rather the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ is just basically defecating in its diaper. It's down 1.33%. greater risk because it's smaller, scrappier, overall smaller, scrappier companies. So anything is going to cause it to have a much greater reaction. And if we have a bull day, when you come back with me next week, if we have a bull day, you'll probably see the Dow go up a little, the S&P 500 go up some a little more, and the NASDAQ go up the most. You say, well, why would I ever invest in the S&P, in Dow if I can get more in NASDAQ? Because you're taking greater risk in the NASDAQ. You're paying a price for that opportunity to make more. Because on the upside, you can make a lot of money in a high-risk stock. But on the other side, you can take an absolute ass bath if on that too, because there is greater risk, and so anything is going to be magnified up or down on these markets. Now, I wanted to allow me here. I'm going to have to back this out a little bit so you can see some of these other markets here. Oh, for pity's sake. Come on. Okay, here we go. I hope you can still see this. But now, have a look here at some of these. Like, where is the Nikkei? Oh, I got to back it out even more, for heaven's sakes. Okay, apologies for this, but here we are. Nikkei 225. In other words, this isn't the whole Tokyo Exchange, but it is the pulse of a good representation of the exchange. 225 large companies on the Tokyo Exchange. And as you can see, they are having a bullish day on the Tokyo Exchange. Similarly, the Hang Seng is having a bullish day. Looking around here, I never paid much attention. I pay much attention to Australia. Let's go over here. Now the CAC 40. That is 40 companies on the Paris Bourse, but you'll hear me call it the exchange in Paris. So, in other words, if that is a good measure, notice that they started out bullish on the day, but they've been tailing off into bear territory as the day went along. I think, yeah, they're closed now over there in Paris. The market is closed for the day. London, the FTSE 100, again, it is an index. It's not an exchange. It's not the London Exchange. It's 100 stocks on the London Exchange. If you got a percentage change up or down of less than 0.2, 0.25%, you know, that's just kind of like a burp. It's not really much to write, anything to write home about. But here, it's enough that I'm kind of, I take notice that in London, they were bullish and the FTSE 100 went up about 0.5%. So that's okay. And then I already showed you these over here. Here's an odd one, and I'll bring this up later, but I'll just mention now, VIX. VIX is not a stock. It's not an index. It's not really an index of stock. It is an index of volatility. So today, there was a lot more. See how that's green? That means that there was substantially more volatility today than there was yesterday. Volatility has to do with uncertainty. Right now, the markets are just in an absolute tizzy of uncertainty. It's something that people who hold stocks, buy and sell stocks, really don't like uncertainty. If that's just not something we want. And the uncertainty right now is coming out of Washington. It's just like I have my former students from years past contact me all the time, day and night, on LinkedIn DMs and all that kind of stuff, saying, what the hell is going on? And, you know, your guess is as good as mine on what the hell is going on right now. But anyway, let me take you down real quick. Commodities. Let me pull up, just expand this a little bit. Here's the thing. Crude oil was way down. Now, there are two kinds of crude here. There's sort of an index of all crude oil. And it was way down below $60 a share because the OPEC nations were cranking out tons of oil. And the purpose, they do it every, you know, 5-10 years. They just produce a huge amount of oil, drive prices down, and drive the smaller producers, oil producers, out of business. And a long time ago, I was in the oil and gas business down in Texas. And, you know, if they decided they were going to wipe out all the landmen and all the wildcatters, the OPEC countries would just turn on the spigots and drive the price down until we couldn't afford to drill. We couldn't even afford to put the oil in reserve tanks. But that's over now because there are rumors right now of war with Iran. So that's pushing the price of crude oil up. Now there's one here called Brent crude. That's light, sweet, really beautiful oil. And it has a higher price than the normal average oil. And there are many grades of oil. So it'll have a higher price, and it has jumped a lot in the last 48 hours or so. Now here are metals, gold, copper, and silver. The one to keep your eye on, because it is a speculator's metal, is gold. Last semester, I started the semester with gold below $3,000 an ounce. And now, I told my class that it was going to make it through 4,000 by the time the class was over, and it did. And now I will tell you that $5,000 an ounce, which is unheard of, is going to happen probably by spring break. We'll have $5,000 an ounce. Oh, wow, that's great. No, it's not. Gold is the safe harbor when investors are scared to death of what's going to happen in an economy. All these other markets, they operate minute to minute, buy, buy, sell, sell. Gold is measuring what's down there. And gold, if all hell breaks loose and the economy begins to collapse, you trade in gold. So that's why you have these gold bugs, as we call them, buying like there's gold like there's no tomorrow. And that is just the reality of it, is that that market doesn't care what your political opinion is. That market is driven by expectations of the future. Remember, everything is based on expectations in our pricing. And that's gold is just warning us, just sending us a big red flag. This is going to get really bad. The numbers that are coming out of Washington, no one believes them now. We're looking with our own eyes. And do we believe what we're being told, or do we believe our eyes on what's happening to the economy? We're seeing, I'm not going to get into it too much, but you look at this. If you want an objective opinion about what's going to happen in the future, you don't ask someone who has a vested interest in you believing in the future. You ask someone who's looking ahead and figuring out where, how big the crater is going to be down the road 6 months or a year. So you keep this in mind, that whatever these markets are, now Wall Street boys, they're going to support their pet companies like Tesla and companies like that. Never mind that. Look at the average, the basic companies. What are they doing? What are their stock prices doing? Look at the commodities. What are they doing? What are they going up in price? Because it would be going up in price. Most, a lot of it is because they are buying, they are essentially hedging against a future that is offering out invitations to darkness. This is what we do in finance, is we look at the future through a number that we put in here now. And that's our best assessment of what is going to happen. We don't care about the past. That's accounting. The past is dead. I'll give you an example. You, madam, you bought a stock for $100 a share, and it has fallen to $10 a share. You come to me and you ask me, well, what do I do now? And I say, well, what do you want to happen? Well, obviously, I want the stock price to go back to $100 or more. And I'm going to ask you, do you know where that $100 is? It's with Jesus. It's gone. Your stock is worth $10. Your decision on whether to buy it or not, to hold on to it or to dump it, is based upon whether or not it will get above $10 a share. The $100 is irrelevant. Absolutely. It's gone. There's nothing left of it. And that's one of the things when I was a consultant, was this idea that somehow a number from the past mattered. I was in a company where they were talking about this $3.7 million investment. And I said, okay, well, let's talk about whether we're going to add this investment to what's already happened. The project is only halfway done, so now's the decision time, whether we're going to put 3.7 more into it. And the CEO of the company said, well, we've already spent $2 million, so we've got to keep going. The same mistake. Whether or not that project is worth $3.7 million is based upon what it is expected to return from where it is now. If completing this project will bring in more than $3.7 million, we go. He said, no, 5.7, no, 3.7. You have already spent the $2 million. It's gone. You can't get it back. We can sell salvage, but that's all. And that's how these markets are going to work. They don't care about what has happened. History is gone in financial markets. And if I can convince you of anything else in this course, it is that there is no reason for you to worry about what has already happened with financial markets and prices, because that information has already been impounded. It's already there in the price now. It's like a chess game. Chess is a Markovian process, as we call it in mathematics. What your next move is on a chessboard is entirely dependent upon where the pieces are right now. How they got there has nothing to do with the optimal next move. That's why you can see some of these chess masters, they just play 20 people at once, because they don't have to know anything about how the board got, each of those boards got to where it is. They just look at the board, okay, what's the best move from here? And that's how investments work. I've bitched at you enough for one day. That's all I have for you today. I thank you for being here.